Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today we'll be talking about some upcoming changes to aids in navigation, which of course is an important topic for loopers and also for any cruisers out there. Our guest is one of our members, Dave Skolnick. Before I go ahead and introduce Dave, though, I do want to take a moment, as usual, and I want to thank and recognize our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, United Yacht Sales of the Carolinas, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage all of the loopers and other listeners out there to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. Without further ado, I do want to give you the background on my guest today. As I mentioned, Dave Skolnick is one of our members. Dave has a degree in naval architecture and marine engineering from Webb Institute. He has a long interest in communications and has worked in support of military and civil long and short range communications, electronics, and navigation. Dave now operates Auspicious Works in Annapolis, which provides communications, yacht management, and delivery support to recreational boaters, just like loopers. As I mentioned, Dave is a member, and he is also going to be a speaker for us at the upcoming AGLCA Rendezvous, which is happening May 2nd through 5th in Norfolk, Virginia. Welcome, Dave.
Hello.
Hey, Dave, it's Kim. Are you there? Hello?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now I can, yes.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. I went ahead and kind of recorded the intro with the your introduction that you gave me, so I will edit the blank spot and what we're saying right now out.
Okay. All right. Lovely.
So I will just go ahead and start. Dave, welcome to Great Loop Radio.
Thank you, Kim. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
I appreciate you taking some time out for us today. As I mentioned in the intro, we are going to talk about some of the changes coming up to aids to navigation, which, of course, is an important topic. So start off, tell us what these changes are.
It's kind of interesting, and I know that for the people that have heard about it at all, there's some uncertainty about what it means. And it does relate to AIS, which many of us have, but not all, have added to our electronic navigation, chart plotters in particular. What the United States Coast Guard is planning to do is to provide a combination of synthetic and virtual aids to navigation, so that not only will the marks show up on your chart plotter because you can look out the window and see them as well, but AIS targets will show up on your electronic navigation chart plotters and laptops and so on, and display those positions.
So explain what you mean by virtual and synthetic.
Well, that's a vocabulary issue, and it's an important one, because the synthetic ones, and it for most of us, for most of the time, especially on the Great Loop, doesn't make a huge difference. But the synthetic ones are a way for the present on AIS a position that it associates with a real physical mark. A virtual one is a mark that doesn't actually exist, but that they present on AIS. So the difference is, the big difference from our perspective is that if you're looking out the window or you're looking on radar, you will see a synthetic mark both on your chart plotter and on radar and looking out the window. And a virtual one is a mark that doesn't exist in any way except on your AIS display, on your chart plotter, or your other electronic navigation, like on a laptop computer.
So are the synthetic markers then in all of the same places as the physical markers that we see today?
And that's a great question, Kim. That's an absolutely great question, because the intent is that if everything is going properly, they will be in the right places. But as many of us know, particularly if you boat all year round, especially in areas where there are ice flows or big storms that can collisions that can knock day marks over. But the big thing is ice flows can move buoys around, and big storms can move buoys around, that the synthetic marks will be where they are supposed to be. And so if you're coming up, I try and stay off, try to use examples other than Chesapeake Bay, because Chesapeake Bay is my home. So I don't want to be too personal about this stuff. So if you're coming down Long Island Sound, for example, having been to Newport and you're heading to New York City, and a storm has blown, two or three marks off their positions, the synthetic AIS mark will show where it's supposed to be, even if the physical mark has blown up into shallow water that could be a problem for you. So in that respect, this is really a benefit to the boater.
So is that why the Coast Guard is making these changes?
No. The real reason, they pay attention to things like that, but the real reason that they're looking at this is maintenance dollars. It's a budgetary issue, and the driver are the really deep water marks, like the safe water buoy coming into the Mississippi River Delta in New Orleans, or the Chesapeake Bay safe water buoy any of the big offshore marks coming up and down the U.S. East Coast, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Charleston, Beaufort, Norfolk, going into Chesapeake Bay, going into Delaware Bay, the big offshore New York Harbor marks, those cost an awful lot of money because they're in extremely deep water. Some of them are in 300, 400, 600 feet of water, and the maintenance costs on those are really extreme. And in addition, especially for us little guys, because we're not 800 feet long or 1,200 feet long, the worst thing that can happen to us is that we're trying to get lined up on a channel going into a major port of entry and hit the safe water buoy. So in this case, you can actually line up on the mark, on the AIS mark, at the point where they transition from synthetic to virtual and take out those deep water marks, and be confident that you're in the right place. Everything is where it should be, including you. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to worry about hitting some 10 or 15 ton hunk of steel that's floating out there. Mm-hmm. So it does help us, even though it's driven by budget by the Coast Guard. So it's not bad, but it is, the reality is it's budget-driven.
It does make me wonder, though, at some point, and certainly most loopers do have an electronic aid to navigation of some sort on their boat, whether it's their chart plotter or if they have AIS. But at some point, if this is a maintenance issue, do we run the risk of the actual physical marks becoming out of place and there's no real effort to correct those because they know the synthetic ones are kind of taking the place? Is that something that we should be worried about?
I think where the Coast Guard is sitting on this issue, and I do have a membership in the U.S. Coast Guard GMDSS Task Force, which is an advisory body. We're not a regulatory body. So I spend a fair amount of time thinking about, worrying about, talking about these kinds of issues. Ultimately, for the barks that are at of greatest concern to the Coast Guard are the deep water ones, and they're just going to come out ultimately. And we're talking years here. This is a U.S. federal process that will take however long it takes, but it's not going to be next week or next month or next year. It's going to be quite a while. So those are going to come out. The kinds of issues that we would worry about, mid-channel mark in Long Island Sound, on one of the rivers in the Mississippi, the goal is still going to be to get the physical mark back as quickly as possible to where it should be. And so if you are coming up the Mississippi River and see a mark that shows an AIS position on your chart plotter and a charted position on the chart on your chart plotter, as well as the paper charts that you may be carrying as well, and your radar is showing that the mark is in a different place, you're going to be really careful, because one of a couple things is going on. One is that the mark has moved off station due to weather or something else, or the channel has moved. It's most likely that if the channel has moved and they've taken the time to move the physical mark, then the AIS-related synthetic mark is going to move probably faster than the physical mark is. But the Coast Guard really is on our side here, as, with support from NOAA and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, to make sure that not only we, but a lot of commercial traffic knows where the heck the deep water is.
Mm-hmm. So, Dave, when should we see some of these virtual or synthetic marks popping up on our chart plotters? You mentioned it's going to take years, but I assume it's kind of they're being rolled out as they can. I wouldn't expect that they're all just going to pop up one day.
No, right. Nobody flips the switch and makes it happen. About 2 years ago, the very first attempts. Were not attempts, but the first experiments were made on how well this was all going to work, and those started in the lineup to Newark Harbor. Shortly after that, there were some in San Francisco Bay, and there are now some as well in the Great Lakes. To my knowledge, those are all synthetic marks. They haven't actually pulled any actual physical marks at all. But that's going to come. And again, that's years out in front of us. They're making progress in this respect, and ultimately it is progress. But we're looking at areas where there's either a heck of a lot of traffic or it's really deep water. And for a looper who's worried about whether something is 4 or 5 feet or 8 or 10 feet, it's just not going to be a huge deal in the next decade.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any other benefits or detriments that boaters or loopers specifically should be aware of regarding this issue?
One of the nice things is that it's yet another element that contributes to us getting AIS on our boats, so that we can see other commercial traffic. And as you're coming up someplace, and I am going to go back to the Chesapeake Bay because I do know it best. If you're coming up the upper bay and heading to the C&D Canal, they've already got synthetic marks lined up for the entrance into the C&D Canal, so that you know not only where you are and where the deeper water is, because if you're out of the channel, it's all very, very shallow up there, but you also know where the commercial traffic, the tugs and tows that are coming in both directions are going to want to stay, because there's no room for anybody outside of the channel up there. So it's good for all of us in that respect.
Wonderful. I'm going to take a short break and play a message from one of our sponsors, and then we'll come back and continue on with our conversation. We'll be right back.
Okay, Kim.
AGLCA Admiral sponsored Dog River Marina is located at the mouth of the Tenton Waterway in Mobile, Alabama, only 22 miles from the Gulf of Mexico. The marina encompasses 95 slips, 80 of which are sheltered. They offer a ship store, courtesy car, rental cars, 24-hour guard service, and shore power. The complex's full-service repair facility is staffed with highly trained personnel to handle everything from simple repairs to complex overhauls. For more information, visit www.dogriver.com.
And we're back on Great Loop Radio talking with member Dave Skolnick. Our topic today is upcoming changes for some of the aids to navigation out there, and we've been talking about some of the virtual and synthetic marks that will be coming to waterways near us sometime soon. Dave, you and I also talked about search and rescue a bit. Tell me about that.
One of the newer things that we've seen in the electronics and communications piece of boating has been AIS search and rescue transmitters, SARTs. And these are very similar to PLBs, the personal locator beacons that some of us have bought to carry on our life jackets. The difference is that the PLBs work much like EPIRBs do and work through the satellite system for search and rescue. The AIS SARTs show up on AIS, so that presumably, if you're going to buy them at all, you've got an AIS receiver at least, if not a transponder on your boat. And so the boat you fell off of and anybody who's close to you who's got AIS, who are going to be the most in the best position to respond most quickly to try and drag you out of the water, especially if it's cold, mm-hmm. are going to be in the best position to find you and see you on their AIS displays. And the many of the AIS systems associated with both synthetic and virtual aids to navigation will also receive and retransmit they're called, for the techie geeky people, they're called Type 21 AIS messages associated with a man overboard and on an AIS search and rescue transmitter will retransmit that. So it's the same message. It's the same location as where you actually are in the water. And so it increases the safety associated with carrying something that says, here I am, I fell off, I need help. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me at least, that's a cool thing.
Mm-hmm. And this technology is available today?
Today, yes, correct. There are some minor issues. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just going to ask where someone can get that and what the cost would be.
It's the same kind of cost as a PLB. It's between $150 and $300, depending on which brand you get. They have them at West Marine. You can get them at Defender. There are advertisements in the back of places like the Waterway Guide that is a AGLCA sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
For
right.
These kinds of devices, they're very readily available. You just need to know that they exist, so that when you flip past the ads, you can see that's something you might care about.
And they work with all AIS that's out there today? You don't need an upgrade or anything like that to your system?
It's very important when you add AIS to your boat that you update the firmware in your chart plotter. Some of the messages, like the Type 21, are not in what the software was in your chart plotter when you bought it. It's not hard to do. And my suggestion would be, if you think that you're out of date, if you've got a chart plotter that's more than a couple of years old, that you might post on the AGLCA forum, and one of the many of us that have been through this process before can hold your hand and walk you through the process of getting your firmware updated to make sure that if you put an AIS search and rescue transmitter on your spouse or your grandchild or your dog or your dinghy, that it'll actually show up on your chart plotter. It will definitely show up on all the Coast Guard resources. It'll show up on the commercial stuff. The commercial version of what we call a chart plotter and ECDIS, those guys are religious about, because they're legally required to be keeping things up to date. So they'll all see it. But it would be really the best if someone that falls off your boat shows up on your own chart plotter, and that means keeping your firmware up to date.
That's great advice. You and I also talked earlier about private aids to navigation. What are the issues surrounding that?
Well, this is something that I think a lot of recreational boaters don't necessarily see, that when you go up a tributary off of the main commercial routes for things, that there's a point where the Coast Guard supported and maintained aids to navigation stop, and all of the reds and greens, the lateral marks going up that creek, are actually privately maintained. There is some individual, it might be a government, a local government, it might be a yacht club, it might be a marina, are taking care of those marks. And there's some really great interest in the community in supporting both virtual and synthetic aids to navigation over AIS to your chart plotter, that the regulation isn't quite there yet. And there's, in the United States, there's an issue there, because the Coast Guard, and as well as local and state governments, are responsible for the physical marks, but there's an FCC relationship because it's a radio transmitter, and there needs to be a radio license to transmit in order to make all that stuff work. That's probably at least a year away, and I will certainly keep Kim and the association advised at the point where you can pull the trigger and your yacht club or your home marina can apply for a license to start helping yourselves and your colleagues and transient visitors to your marina or your yacht club, in order to be able to provide that very clear fairway down through what may well be a shifting channel into your facility.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. Yes, please keep us posted as that progresses. Told me about an interesting change in how foghorns will work. So let's touch on that if we can.
If you're a techie geeky person, and I certainly am one of those, this is an interesting one. So the way that foghorns work today, most of them, almost all of them, is that there's a little optical detector that runs that looks for deterioration in light transmission over space. The big words, sorry. Techie geeky again. But ultimately what that means is that there's a thing that's like a like you get when you're trying to go through a door in a supermarket that opens on its own. And the problem is with Coast Guard foghorns is that the hardware to do that for fog isn't available any longer. There's no significant market for those kinds of detectors, and they're getting old and they're breaking and they're wearing out. And so what's happening now is that the Coast Guard is shifting to a system that's radio operated, which is going to require a little bit more attention from us as boaters, because as you come into an area and you're going to know if it's foggy outside because you're maintaining a watch and you're looking out the window and you can't see past the bow, and you check your charts and it says that there's a radio-operated foghorn. And so most of evolving standard and things could change. But right now it's VHF radio channel 83A. And you key the microphone five times, which just means that you push and release the button, push and release the button, push and release the button, total of five times. And then the foghorn will come alive and start to beep for an hour. And
okay,
that's definitely going to be a change for us, what we expect, but it gives us a little more control. And again, it's budget driven by the Coast Guard, because there's not room in the federal budget for them to completely reinvent the old optical detectors. And this is not only less expensive, but it is more reliable. And although it does require some action on our part, so we need to know about that.
Interesting. Oh, and you said still a couple years away maybe from that being widespread?
There are some in Maine today, and there are a good number in the Great Lakes. In most of the areas in the Great Lakes, there are now physical signs so that when you come in and out, when there is not fog and you can actually see things, they actually have notices on that. But the NOAA charts have not caught up yet with the annotations to make people aware that it's coming. But again, many areas in down east Maine and a number in the Great Lakes have already got the radio-operated foghorns.
Well, Dave, thank you for all of this really interesting information. Before we wrap up, as I mentioned in the intro, you're also speaking at our spring rendezvous in Norfolk in May. Can you give us just a snapshot of what that presentation will be about?
Really looking forward to that. I'm going to be talking about a number of things that may be of communications interest to people on the Great Loop. Wi-Fi and cell phones are certainly the priority there, and I'll have in fact, I'm sitting next to a piece of hardware that I'm still sitting under an NDA that I can't talk about yet, but I'm trying to get permission to unveil that in Norfolk at the rendezvous.
Well, that would be great. We could have something brand new. So, Dave, I appreciate you being willing to do that for us in Norfolk. I also appreciate your time this morning. As I said, it was a really interesting conversation. I appreciate it. We'll have to have you back again soon.
That's always a pleasure to speak with you, Kim, and a great pleasure to work with the people on the Loop.
Well, thank you, and thank you all for listening. Until next week, safe cruising.
G'day.